Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Black Shakers is a contemporary folk opera, reinterpreting traditional Shaker hymns to tell the true story of Prime Lane, a free black man who joined the Shaker Society in Albany in 1802. 9 years later, he renounced the faith, attempting to take his family with him. When his daughters Betty and Phoebe elected to stay in the convent as Shaker sisters, Prime sued the Shakers. There Are No Black Shakers is a debut opera written and directed by Jean-Marc Supervielle-Sauvac with musical direction by Gwen Laster. It will be performed at the Yard in Beacon on Thursday, July 24th at 7 p.m. Jean-Marc Supervielle-Sauvac is a multidisciplinary artist, curator, and educator whose work explores stories absent from dominant historical narratives. Gwen Laster is an award-winning creative violin player and conceptual composer. Her devotion to exploring creative writings, readings, spirituality, and current events inspires adventurous compositions rooted in the African diaspora and other global cultures. Jean-Marc Supervielle-Sauvac and Gwen Laster both join us now. Welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you
for having us.
Jean-Marc, let's begin with you. Before we speak about creating No Black Shakers, There Are No Black Shakers, a contemporary folk opera, could you give our listeners a little background on the story that the piece tells, the history that you launched from?
Sure. The title is meant to be a little bit of a provocation, but it is very close to the truth in the sense that when I first met Johanna Batman, executive director at the Shaker Heritage Society up there in Albany, I was visiting an installation by another artist, actually, Julia Whitney Barnes, and I was fascinated by this idea of this radical community and egalitarianism among race and gender, and what would have made this community abolitionists at the time by default. And the question of why wouldn't there be a great number of those of African descent adopting this religious doctrine was the first question. Where are my Black Shakers? That was my first question. And the historical record is such that there were a few, and the case of the opera itself is around the drama of one particular family, the Lane family, Prime Lane, the father and his children, his wife Hannah and his daughters Betty and Phoebe. But the fact is that by all accounts we would think as there not being a distinction between a Shaker and a Black Shaker, that there would just be Shakers, turns out not to have been actually the truth, and that Black Shakers were indeed thought of as different and treated quite differently.
How did learning that turn into the creation of a contemporary folk opera?
Well, I'd like to think that the characters in the opera include those that I just mentioned, but also the hymns themselves. The Shakers were well known for their furniture, obviously, their herbal remedies, amongst other things. But the flat broom, as well as far as technological innovation goes. But they were also prolific hymn writers, and many of their hymns speak of freedom. Now, to a Shaker, freedom is a spiritual, existential kind of idea of a closeness with God and the female and the male form. But I was very curious about what freedom for Black people in that same time in New York State, what it would have meant to have been essentially a non-citizen in this state and in this country.
How did you connect with Gwen? And then we'll bring her into the interview to discuss the musical aspect of the opera.
Yes.
How did you connect and recruit her to work on this with you?
Well, I'm very proud to call Gwen a friend, and we are also co-awardees with the Artsmith Hudson Empowering Artist Award. And she was the first person I thought of when the thought came into my head as whether there could be a bluesified version of these Shaker hymns, because they're very 4/4, they're square, they're kind of work songs. When I put the question to Gwen, her answer was, yeah. I'll let you take it from there.
Go ahead, Glenn.
Well, yeah, once Jean-Marc, he himself chose the hymn, and some of them, a couple of them were familiar to me in their original forms. For instance, there was the Aaron Copland, which I had known from orchestral work. And so I think the beauty of having hymns and the composers who write hymns is that the music is very, in its most basic form, it allows you this flexibility to improvise around the approach to it, using different tempos, different phrasings of the melodies, different harmonic structures, even though the some of those pieces had ideas for very basic triadic sounding chords, but it lent itself to even extending some of the chordal and tonal ideas. And so when we talk about bluesifying things, it was pretty easy to do that. And then so I thought of the ensemble that would be able to kind of manifest this whole concept and this feeling. And so we had a bassist. Of course, we have to have that for our harmonic foundation, and we had rhythm, and we also had a chordal instrument. So the ensemble that we used was a lead instrument. So violin is kind of, is the melodic lead, and also like the voice as well. A lot of people say strings are the closest to the human voice. So my character in the ensemble was to be the leading voice. And then we had bass, we had guitar, and we also have rhythm drums. So that was the inspiration and the content of moving forward with making different, creating a different approach to standard classical.
It's an opera, so it's sung through. There isn't, or is there text, spoken word text in the piece?
Yes, it's sung through. Sometimes we are taking liberties to repeat various parts depending on what makes sense in the grand scheme of things. Sometimes we have the freedom to do different arrangements. Maybe we compose introductions or use various sections of the pieces for introductions. And so then we have also that freedom. We have the freedom of what instrument will do what vocalist. Maybe there's a soloist that's going to just do an introduction. Maybe we're going to use some of the music as a backdrop to some of the narratives, to some of the script. So we, Jean-Marc's pretty wide open, and so were we as musicians. So it's working out really well, and I'm looking forward to our next performance, which will again be different because we have a couple of people that are new that were not in the first performance. So this to me is very exciting because we don't know what we're going to come up with, but we just have our framework and our structure. And that's pretty much all we need to kind of make this a different experience and an experience that's going to be experienced by only those that come to this performance.
The performance is on July 24th at the Yard in Beacon, New York at 7 p.m. Jean-Marc, how did you develop the narrative and how do the songs that you have selected and have worked on with Gwen and the other musicians and the actors and singers, how does it all come together to tell the story you wanted to convey?
Yeah, it's so good to hear Gwen's expertise. I'm not someone who's musically trained. I'm not theatrically trained either. I'm by no sense of the word a librettist. But I found that this story was so dramatic and so irresistible. The idea of a father, a free black man who would feel the need to take the Shakers to court to sue on the basis of the identity of not for custody of his daughters, but for theft of his property. He sued the Shakers because he claimed that they were stealing his slaves. And this is the narrative that has often been told when you ask the question, "Are have there been any black Shakers?" This is one of the stories that come up. And I feel like Prime, the father, is often portrayed as a villain. And I really felt that there was something more nuanced there. And I felt a certain empathy for Prime. I had to know more. And so the corpus of the text is really mostly citation. I think of myself as a fabulator, a critical fabulator, in the words of historian Saadia Hartman. But most of the text is verbatim what came out of the Supreme Court judgment. It went all the way up to the New York State Court of Appeals. There are extracts from the Shaker journals themselves. The Shakers were prolific note takers as well. There are accounts from the, or just citations from actual New York State law from 1799, the first passage of New York State's painfully slow, gradual abolition of slavery. And interspersed are some, what basically the documents wouldn't say or couldn't say. That's where I came in somewhat reluctantly. With a gentle touch in order to give voice to Prime and Hannah and Phoebe and Betty in terms of what might they actually have had to say or sing in terms of the hymns to tell that story.
As this is, you've just said, your first libretto, where do you normally apply your fabulation, and how is this related to that previous work?
That's a good question. Somebody was asking me the other day what my superpower was, and I think I do suffer from ADHD, but I think it's my superpower. So I can't really seem to settle on anything in particular. I would describe myself as a public artist, and so I'm definitely interested in those places and spaces where art can be developed and brought to the people in spaces that are other than galleries or museums. So I tend to make a lot of public sculpture, as well as I did a whole series with doctored prints. I call myself a doctorer of 19th century prints. There's a really a kind of Swiss Army knife approach to the way in which I'm looking to tell those silent or silenced histories that have to do with the history of this country. I'm an immigrant. I wasn't born here, so I can very much empathize with the idea of being a refugee in one's own country. And what it's like to think of citizenship not as a right, but merely as a privilege or something even temporary at that.
Gwen, how do you, or what goes into putting together the group of musicians that will join you for a performance like this to work on a new project like this? How do you decide? I know, I'm sure you have countless friends who are amazing musicians because of your incredible talent and longevity in the field, but how do you decide for yourself who you're going to ask to join you on something like this?
Well, after I read the script, I thought about, and after I knew what the hymns were, I thought about, and after, of course, we had this conversation about where we wanted to go musically with the music. I thought about who would be a good fit, and then also, and thinking about the hardest part for me was getting the singers and who I were going to be diverse enough to also to be dramatic. And we have acting skills as well. So that was actually the hardest part because I'm less in contact with those people. Not that I don't perform with singers a lot, but this was such an interesting and niche kind of a project that we first of all wanted to have African American singers involved in this whole story because we wanted to bring it to light in a very realistic way. And we wanted to, after I read of the characters, Prime Ring, his wife, his daughter, we wanted to kind of bring it to a modern day reality, so to speak, in a way that these people are going to feel comfortable in their voices, not only with their acting skills, but also the range of their voices and the singing of the hymn. The short answer is chemistry. I always think about people that are going to be team players that are going to come together first, people that are going to be easy to work with first, because we both know tons of people that are absolutely amazing in what they do, but are they going to be a good fit together? How's the chemistry going to be? How are they going to be as team players? How are they going to be in terms of generosity during our rehearsal and during our process? So, yeah, it took a little bit of calling around and just asking people, and it took a lot of going to websites and listening to singers, listening, thinking about a low voice, a middle voice, and a high voice, asking around a little bit, but really just a lot of research on the websites, listening to singing. Do I think that these people are going to all blend together? The musicians, well, it was a little easier for me because I played with everybody, trusted everyone.
There are no Black Shakers. A contemporary folk opera will have a performance at the Yard in Beacon, New York on Thursday, July 24th at 7 p.m. Links to more information will be posted along with this conversation at WAMC.org. Jean-Marc Supervielle-Sovac and Gwen Laster, thank you very much for your time, and I hope the performance is attended in a smash and achieves beyond your wildest dreams.
Yeah, we hope so too.
Thank you so much. Yes, you and the entire WAMC team, of course, and Doritos the dog are invited.
Once again, There Are No Black Shakers, a contemporary folk opera, will be performed at the Yard in Beacon, New York, this Thursday evening. Links to more information are posted along with this interview at WAMC.org. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable.